Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share this time with you because the information is meant to empower. I don't look at left, right, conservative, liberal, politics, ideologies. Those are all irrelevant to the idea. Do we deserve to live a longer and healthier life and be happy in the process, to cooperate, to be able to forgive ourselves and forgive others, to look at the lessons we've learned from the mistakes we make, and we all make mistakes. Every single transition in life leads us to things we don't know, and in the process of learning it and mastering that particular section of our life, we do things that, well, later on we think, well, that was stupid. Of course it is. But just imagine criticizing a baby when they try to walk and fall down. You don't criticize them, because if you did, they may not want to get back up again. Instead, it's just part of life. And so we're not the same people that we were 10 years ago, certainly not the same people we were 30 years ago. Everything evolves and changes, and hopefully in a more lightened way. That's why I'm selecting the topics today, because I see something happening, and I see something happening on a massive scale. And that is that we're looking at the disparate individual things that affect us. Oh, a bank just, you know, went bankrupt out in California, of course. And then another bank went bankrupt over the weekend. But they're both bailed out today. Oh, okay, that's good news. Is it? What did we learn from that? Then we find out food prices going up. We're involved in high prices and inflation. Mortgages going up at a time when our wages are not. Can we afford to stay where we're at? What happens when we can't? Look at all the illnesses we're suffering from. We've never been this sick before in our history as a nation. And we're not doing anything about it. Why not? These are issues that are important. We have wars around the world. Why do we have them? How do we get there? Who benefits? Who doesn't? Why do we allow it? So you see, we're thinking that every one of these situations is separate and unique and distinct. I'm saying they are all related. They're all interconnected. So over the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be presenting information that will help unravel this issue to see if it makes sense to you when you see this interconnectivity. But we begin always with something we can all benefit from, that is living a healthier life. And I'm going to be talking first about the Omega Quant Analytics scientific research that shows that omega-3, the fatty acids, could decrease death rates in post-menopausal women. Now, women with a high omega-3 status are up to 20% less likely from one single nutrient. That's it, one nutrient, you have a 20% less likelihood of dying from any cause. How about that? Compared to those with low levels of DHA and EPA. And this was published in the Journal of Clinical Lipidology. And they looked at the associations between the omega-3 scores and levels in the red blood cells, and all-cause death. And this was over a 15-year period. I remember doing a study. This is about 15 years ago, and it was for a year, and we met every week for a year. And it was 500 women. They were all in menopause or postmenopause. And the idea was there were 63 different conditions that can occur in women, but some have multiple conditions, and others may have a few. And we wanted to see what impact would a lifestyle and behavior modification have, no medicine, even though it was medically supervised. And at the end of this study, 93% of all menopausal symptoms were gone. And I mean, even in postmenopausal women who were overweight and fatigued and had thinning of the mucous membranes, they couldn't have normal intimate relations. They would, it would chafe them, and they would end up bleeding and have infections. And they had fatigue. Their hair had turned brittle and thin. Their eyebrows thinned out. Their nails became fungus. Their muscle mass was reduced. And that's what they were going through. All that was reversed. In fact, 8 women of the group reversed their menopause completely, as if they were now in their 30s. And that I was invited to, because that had never been proven before, and I was invited to a major scientific conference in Chicago and presented the information, and it was published in a journal. But then nothing happens. And I was thinking about this yesterday when I was doing a workout. I was out in the pasture just running with some dogs and just joyful watching a new puppy running around trying to be friends with all the other animals. And I thought, wow, I remember recently I was doing a program for PBS station, one in particular, Rocky Mountain Television. And this is just before COVID. I mean, just as COVID was happening, so it never got on out there. And I haven't shown it yet. I'm still going to. But in it, I filmed Dr. Dean Ornish, one of the most outstanding cardiologists in American history. And now this goes back at least 30 to 35 years. And he was doing a study. I heard about it by one of the participants who happened to be in my audience. And I went down to visit him. And I asked, could I have permission to film him and everything people were doing? He said, yes. He was very open. Now, the diet was not, it was about a healthy vegan diet, de-stressing, and exercise, very little emphasis upon supplements. And he had outstanding results, and so outstanding, he published two studies, one in the New England Journal of Medicine, and one in the British Medical Journal of The Lancet. And then I'm thinking, and we had a conversation, I thought, wow, this is going to change cardiology. It didn't. And we had a debate. He and I were on one side of the debate on national PBS, and the whole rest of the panel were, we have therapies like balloon angioplasty. That doesn't cure anything. And stents, that doesn't cure anything. So nothing that they were presented actually reversed, and what Dean Ornish did reversed it. He should have won the Nobel Prize. But he's a humble person. And so all these decades later, I film him, and what is he doing? You talk about a challenge. He had 9 individuals who were so sick that they had to have a heart transplant, meaning the whole heart had to be taken out of the body with a donor's heart put in its place. And yet not in one of those 9 people did that occur. He was able to improve their health using the same protocols that he used before. So none of those people who I filmed had to have a heart transplant. Now that should have been on the headlines of every major paper, new treatments for heart disease could save, a million lives a year. Not a word, nothing. So we have to come to this understanding, even though myself at the leading that optimism, we have been over-optimistic about A, people's ability to change, B, people's ability to be manipulated by certain messages, so they believe those messages, even when their messages go against them and can cause their death. See how close-minded, reactionary, and protective the medical community as a whole is, the scientific community behind that medical community, and the scientific and medical journals all working in one concerted effort that whatever makes them profit and gets them their grants, that is what you're told. Anything that challenges that, no matter how beneficial, including saving your heart, that is swept aside. Don't discuss it. Don't open that door. But behind that door, a lot of very innovative people with remarkable and wonderful, if not miraculous, ways of treating. Doesn't mind. We'll just call it quackery, or we'll call it non-supported or pseudoscience. And yet these people have never interviewed a single one of these people who've had these miracle treatments, nor the doctors or scientists who are officiating them. That's the world we live in today. That's not being bitter. It's not being cynical. It's being pragmatically honest. You're going to hear Dr. Fleming on my program on Tuesday night in an exclusive interview. It's exclusive. And boy, does he open up with hard exculpatory evidence about what really went on to got us to put us where we had so many casualties and injuries during the last 3 years. It's going to be devastating because we went over all the information, and I have to have solid proof before I go on the air with someone. I want to know that what they're saying is not their opinion. They've got evidence to back it up. That's the level of scholarship we engage in. We just don't have someone on the air and says, how was your summer vacation? It didn't go that way. Now, why do I say that? Because I'm going to ask him the following question. Do you believe that if enough people become aware of what you're saying and show that it's true, that they'll be able to ask their state attorney generals to do official grand jury investigations into the people who perpetrated this. I don't know what his answer will be, but it's likely to say yes. And I'm going to say, if he says yes, I'm going to say, I'm offering an alternative position. Right now, and as of yesterday, the most popular reality news show in America, which is nationwide, is slapping people into unconsciousness, creating concussions, breaking jaws, dislodging and cracking eye sockets in the eye from the eye socket, causing deafness. With your bare hand, you go 1, 2, 3, and just hit a person as hard as you can with an open hand. And this is what Americans want, blood. This is hedonic, the hedonistic principle, going from simple pleasure at the beginning, the pleasure of a loved one, the pleasure of a child, the pleasure of your friends, the pleasure of a good meal, the pleasure of being able to know you have a secure job, the pleasure of having a job you like that's actually constructive to you, the pleasure of going dancing or to an opera or to a movie or to a folk dancing or reading a good book. These are simple pleasures, and it's the simple pleasures that form the foundation of the contentment within our own life. But then you start to become successful. And as you become successful, to the degree that you are successful, you go from being a full person filled with a sense of life to becoming less fulfilled with life and more fulfilled with need, and less fulfilled with fulfillment and more filled with insecurity. So every step that you become more successful in life, you also concomitantly and concurrently, you become more insecure. Until one night, you're so damn insecure, but you're so successful at what you committed yourself to at the exclusion of everything else that was essential, that no longer the simple pleasures manifest because they're no longer relevant to who you are. You have to live in a certain area code. You have to have certain friends. You have to be able to pay a certain amount for dresses or suits. You have to be able to be selected for certain movies or television or certain awards. So everything becomes a glorification of your relevance. Because otherwise, you're what I call and coined the term, the empty soul. You're there, you're smiling, waving, acting, singing, dancing, but you're empty. You're not connected with what you do. You're only connected with what you feel will be the outcome. I'll get happy when I'm successful. I'll get happy when people notice me, when I'm completely relevant to their life. When they wake up in the morning and think, what in the world is Beyonce doing today? I've got to know. No, we don't give a about anyone out there, you celebrities. You really have made all wrong choices in last night at the Academy Awards. It's just, to me, of course I wouldn't watch it. I wouldn't go stick my hand in a full toilet either, and it's about the same. I wouldn't want to watch a bunch of extreme, empty, narcissistic fools doing a mental masturbation into the music of Lady Gaga as if somehow that was appropriate behavior for anyone. But it was appropriate for Will Smith when he smacked and knew nothing, there'd be no consequences. He still got the movie contracts. He's still out there. And he has never once called Chris Rock to apologize. And when Chris Rock got into a new Netflix comedy and brought this up, guess what happened? All the critics attacked him. How dare you attack Will Smith? You make yourself look small. Really? I thought the perpetrator and the person behind the perpetrator, his wife, Jada, were the ones who should have called, who looked small, but not when your tribe is a tribe of emotional bestiality, ones who have no boundaries except those that have been well established by the guardians of their class structure. And you think those people, you think the people who are smacking one another into unconsciousness and happy about it and hi-fi, do you think there's not going to be, now it goes from an open hand to a closed fist? We're into blood sport because we become a society, a civilization of blood and violence. Do you think those people are going to be angry about what's happening in Yemen? Not at all. They don't give a damn. Or in Ukraine? No. Or national debt? No. They don't care about anything. So where exactly, Dr. Fleming, are these 50 million needed people, 15% who can cause change, going to come from when we are involved in bread circuses, self-gluttony, obsessive need for extreme and vulgar insights into the human condition, parroting real life, as if real life is you're just a normal person. Shame on you. Get out of my neighborhood. Police, that person's not rich and famous. They're not the right color. They're not the right gender. Get them out of here. Let's shame them. I'm just a person. Well, we're more than people. This is Mount Zeus. We're gods and goddesses. Now, don't look at us in the morning when we're sitting on a toilet and that $300 meal comes out. It won't exactly be gourmet. But who's to know? No one knows how foolish, how stupid, how vile, how self-centered, how egotistical the Hollywood, the rap community, the Wall Street titans, they're all tribes, and they're all competing for relevance. And the only people who have relevance are just regular people, because they never thought that not being relevant was anything of a special need. I just want to share that with you, because all that came out this morning when I was out there running about how few people there are today to do anything correctly. Because we are the most dysfunctional group of people in American history. And it's getting worse, a lot worse. So anyhow, if you're one of those people who don't want to be irrelevant, you want to be relevant to yourself and your friends and your family and the morals and the character and the decency and the spirituality and the ethics that you grew up with, and you can thank your mothers, your grandmothers, your grandfathers, and the family, well, these people despise you. So why in the world, unless you suffer from Stockholm Syndrome, would you read a single line out of the New York Times or watch Rachel Maddow or these other dancing clowns? Why? That's on you if you do. So I just want to share that. Now, that seems completely disconnected, but it's not, because what did I do that made all these differences? Do you think it was just the diet? No. Do you think it was just the change that caused the people with heart disease to reverse it and denormalize? No. Everything starts with a value system. What do you value? If you start with the value and not the symptom, and you change your value, you first have to change your perception of what your values are before you can change your belief system. Your belief systems are merely an extension of values, and the values are an extension of your perception, and your reality is your perception. So what you perceive as real becomes real, even when it's not. So that's why, if you sit across from me, as I'm counseling people who have deadly illnesses, I never once talk about the illness or the symptoms. I talk about what is the central meaning of your life, and if you don't have one, how long has it been, and what would you like it to be? What's that have to do with my... It has everything to do. Everything in life starts with a perception. Got the wrong ones, if you're connected with the media, if you're connected with Republicans or Democrats, you're connected with the rich, connected with super rich, connected with the uber rich, then your whole perception is there's never enough to make me happy. I need more. Look at the athletes today. Talented, you bet. Some of them, maybe most of them, decent people. But those are not the ones people pay attention to, the extremist. Not good. And from Turin University of Medical Sciences, why melatonin is a powerful anti-cancer indolamine. This was published in Toxicology and Applied Pharmacology. And it just talks about how melatonin is very good to prevent cancer. Now, it's a hormone. It's produced by the pineal gland that's about the size of a grape seed in the middle of the brain. And it possesses diverse biological activity, including anti-tumor action. And melatonin exerts its anti-cancer effects by inhibiting angiogenesis. And increasing angiogenesis is a primary feature of tumor progression. So as long as the blood is getting to the tumor, it's going to grow. Cut off the blood supply, and then you've got angiogenesis. And for this reason, angiogenesis inhibition is a critical step in treating cancer. Well, melatonin targets the nutrients and oxygen supply to cancer cells. And the main targets of melatonin for inhibition of angiogenesis are hypoxia-induced factor 1 alpha and the genes under its control, such as vascular endothelial growth factor. So melatonin inhibits this alpha translocation and endothelial cell migration, invasion, and tube formation. In conclusion, it simply fights the cancer in various ways. Sorry to be a little technical, but that's what it is. And finally, replaying experiences can help future decision-making. University College London published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It's reconnecting with the energy. So let's just say you have a positive experience. At least at the time you had it, it was a positive experience. Remember, a lot of times when we think we're growing, we're not. We're reversing ourselves. We're maladapting to a new standard of behavior or morals or ethics or conditions or rules. But what happened when we weren't a part of that and we experienced something and it was exciting, it was good? Well, we have to erase that. And that's easy for most people to do without realizing you can make a negative experience positive. You can make a positive experience negative. But relaying positive experiences when learning can improve the brain's ability to make future plans and preserve memories of the past. You want to keep what is the best of your past, what I call remarkable moments, positive remarkable moments, because that's what we think about. That's what we can connect to. That's the energy exchange. And the neuroscientists are telling us this. So don't focus upon the negative aspects of life that we all have, the betrayals, the lies, the mistakes, because then every time you think about it, you recreate the energy. So if you were stressed when you were working at a job you didn't like and you're being bullied, and now you think about it, even though you haven't worked there in 20 years, you're recreating biologically and at the genetic level, the epigenetics, you're creating the same phenomena over again. So catch yourself when you start to go into a negative place and reverse it. Take yourself into a positive place. That's what's important. And that's what helps us. And by the way, from the Cleveland Clinic, an article published in Nature Medicine, stay away from the artificial sweeteners. Why? Because once again, they have found it linked to higher rates of heart attacks and strokes. All right? They studied 4,000 people and found those with higher blood levels at the elevated risk of experiencing major adverse cardiac events stay awake from the artificial sweetened beverage. Okay? It's that simple. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm going to be asking you to respond to the idea that we have become a society, not you, not many people, because a lot of people like myself find this just kind of vulgar, but it also shows people who find joy in violence are not people who are going to make the right decisions almost anywhere else in life. And we're having more and more of these bread and circuses distracting us from the control that others have over us. 888-874-4888. I watched Mitt Romney. I can't stand watching Mitt Romney because he's such a hypocrite. But why is it when people, including Tulsi Gabbard, send this over to Tess, if you would, someone who might be able to get this to her, this little clip. I would start by asking, Mr. Romney, is it true that you have become fabulously wealthy, I think a billionaire now or close to it, based upon buying up companies and controlling them, many of those companies going bankrupt, and you never seem to mention all the people who you cause suffering to who have no control. They were just decent, regular people. But at what point do you have enough money? How much money? Well, Clear Channel acquired for $27 billion, 2006. HCA Holdings, $27 billion, 2009, along with KKR. Kioxa, $18 billion. Toshiba Memory Corporation, $17 billion. Athena Health, $17 billion, 2021. Hitachi Metals, $7.5 billion, 2021. Stata, $6.2 billion, 2017. Cantor, $4 billion in 2020. Event, out of Japan, $3.8 billion, 2022. Diversity, $3.2 billion, 2017. Grupo, Blue Coat, Guitar Center, Rocket Software, ITP Aereo, MASH Holdings, $4 billions, and many without disclosed acquisition amounts, including Merchants Fleet, especially in more recent years, and acquisitions that filed Chapter 11. Toys R Us. Okay, was it true that you made a profit off that, but all the other people left with not a penny? Thousands. And Guy Mori, also 2010, Rockport Company. And do you control right now about $160 billion in assets? Recently, on big buying spree in Japan, starting with $40 billion thus far. Also recently focusing on tech service providers and companies in their acquisition management portfolio like 111 Capital, 62 Street, RB Communications, Advertising Directory Solutions, Air Medical. And these are only a tiny little sample, like AMC Entertainment, American Pad and Paper. So you have all these companies and all this control over all these hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people. And you never mention any of this, nor what happens when all the money that comes in, you and your partners take it as your commissions. Wow. How much of that do you give to your church, the Mormon church? What's their view of all this? Just curious, because if I was ever debating every one of these hundreds and hundreds of companies and their what has happened to the workers, what has happened to the unions, what has happened to their health care, what has happened to their wages, I would be interested in. Just a thought. Now, we're going to show you right now a person that has courage. She's a mother. She gave testimony under oath against the teachers' union for suing her over woke curriculum. For all the teachers out there, what is your position on this? Where your union, which sides with all the corporate interest and the government, it decides you can't know what's in the curriculum and don't challenge it. If you do, you'll be sued. Listen to what she has to say.
My name is Nicole Solis, and I am a mother from Rhode Island who was sued by the teachers' union simply because I wanted to know what my kindergartner would be learning in school. And here's how this happened. I asked to see the curriculum, and my school told me I had to submit a public records request. The curriculum wasn't posted online, and it wasn't available in a school district. Then I asked them if they were teaching gender theory, and they told me that they don't call children boys and girls, and they embed the values of gender identity into every classroom, including kindergarten, and they didn't want to answer any of my questions further. They told me that they would communicate with me only through public records requests, and that is the only way I could get my questions answered. And when I did submit the public records request that they told me to submit, and I submitted hundreds because I had hundreds of questions, my school board then put my name on the agenda of a public school board meeting and held a public school board meeting to discuss suing me for submitting the request that they told me to submit. In a 5-hour-long school board meeting, they openly debated my moral character, my political motivations. They said that I was causing chaos, wreaking havoc, harming the district, harming children. One school board member even said she felt unsafe and started to cry.
Man.
Because, as you see, I'm really scary standing here right now. And they really just tarred and feathered me for asking questions. And they had never met me before, and this was the first school board meeting that I had ever been to in my life. They wanted to send a message to other parents that if you ask questions, they will come after you.
Exactly.
Well, at the end of this meeting, they decided that they wouldn't sue me for asking questions because they never intended on actually suing me. They just wanted to publicly humiliate me in a school board meeting that was a show trial. And when that happened, then the teachers union, the largest teachers union in the country, the NEA, did file a lawsuit against me to bully me and harass me with frivolous litigation and to send a message to other parents that if you ask questions about public education, they will come after you.
Okay, man.
What do you think of that? That a parent can be threatened with this lawsuit for simply asking about a curriculum? And by the way, Rodney, if you could please find, if not for today, tomorrow, what was actually said. I want the people in this audience, the first time I played it, I chose not to play that clip because it was so offensive. But now I want people to hear what was said. I want this drag queen, I don't care about drag queens. Be a drag queen all you want. That's your business. That's your life. I believe in your choice. as an adult as yours. But here's what I disagree with. This was a room filled with young children, 4 or 5 years old, and I'm assuming their parents. And when this person said this, they applauded him. But I wanted to try to find the end of that clip where he says something that is extremely troubling and should be to everyone. Being a drag queen, that's his business. You want your kids to see drag queens? That's your business. But what he said to the children in that room, that should be all of our business. Now, that said, I'm very concerned about what I see as ChatGPT. I'm concerned because the younger people who, many, do not have the knowledge of life, the intellect, for critical thinking, to understand where this is going. In fact, the irony of it is, many of the people who are happy with this service, from an independent survey, didn't realize that this is meant to take away their jobs. So you're going to see a whole lot of people coming out of college with no jobs because why pay you when in 3 seconds anything they ask this ChatGPT that it, and its service manual, it can serve immediately and better than you could. So here's Elon Musk, by the way, who helped create this. I didn't know if you knew that, but he created this. He's one of the founders. And then once he saw the direction it was going, he got out of it. But here's some of the things he's saying. Please pay attention what he's saying.
We're rapidly headed towards digital superintelligence that far exceeds any human. I think it's very obvious.
ChatGPT, I think, has illustrated to people just how advanced AI has become. And there are much more advanced versions of that that are coming out.
I think the danger of AI is much greater than the danger of nuclear warheads by a lot.
Because if one company or small group of people manages to develop godlike digital superintelligence, they can take over the world.
Mark my words, AI is far more dangerous than nukes.
At least when there's an evil dictator, that fear is going to die. But for an AI, there would be no death. It would live forever. And then you have an immortal dictator from which we can never escape.
You know, it's quite dangerous technology. I fear I may have done some things to accelerate it.
You know, I played a significant role in the creation of OpenAI. Essentially, at the time, I was concerned that Google was not paying enough attention to AI safety. And so I created OpenAI. And although initially it was created as an open source nonprofit, now it is closed source and for profit.
The average person, they don't see killer robots going down the streets. They're like, what are you talking about? Man, we want to make sure we don't have killer robots going down the street. Once they're going down the street, it is too late.
Do you fear that one day mankind could surf the machines and not the other way around?
Honestly, when I see people on their phones, I think we're already serving the machine. Humans have been the smartest creature on Earth for a long time, and that is going to change with what's typically called artificial general intelligence. So this is, say, an AI that is smarter than a human in every way. Predicting 2025, I think that's reasonably accurate.
It will cause damage or death. There will be an outcry. There will be an investigation. Years will pass. There will be some sort of insight committee. There will be rulemaking. Then there will be oversight, eventually regulations. This all takes many years.
The way in which a regulation is put in place is slow and linear.
Right.
And we are facing an exponential threat. And if you have a linear response to an exponential threat, it's quite likely the exponential threat will win.
AI would be used to make incredibly effective propaganda. Hones the message, looks at the feedback, makes this message slightly better. Within milliseconds, it can adapt its message and shift and react to news. And there's so many social media accounts out there that are not people. How do you know it's a person, not a person?
Because the AI has been advanced for a while. It just didn't have a user interface that was accessible to most people. So what really ChatGPT has done is just put an accessible user interface on AI technology that's been present for a few years.
I think digital superintelligence will happen in my lifetime. 100%.
That's chilling because he is probably one of the world's most knowledgeable people. He created the whole company and technology, he and his partners. Now he's trying to do another company to respond to that, so he would not allow things to be weaponized. Remember, you're dealing with some of the most degenerate thinkers in the world in Silicon Valley, and yet they're the ones who were bailed out. Of course they were. Did you expect anything other than that? Because otherwise, this morning, there'd have been a run on Bank of America and Wells Fargo, and I believe there still will be. But in the short term, $171 billion in bad business was suddenly made whole again by the Federal Reserve and by the Treasury. And yet they said, oh, it won't impact us. The very fact that they wouldn't allow a bad bank with bad management to fail, that's the big issue. And also, did you know that the Silicon Valley Bank provided massive amounts of money and loans to Chinese tech ventures? So now the FDIC and the Federal Reserve are reversing their position and bailing them out. Why? Well, that is yet to be answered, but it's happening. In 2008, all over again, who got bailed out? All the banks. Who made the problem exist? The banks and Wall Street and the cult of their mindset, their tribe. They threw one under the bus, you know, but because they threw one under the bus, everybody else got everything they needed. Citicorp, about $2.3 trillion, more or less. Goldman Sachs, they all got total. The amount varies from anywhere from $13 to $26 trillion. How much did you get? Nothing. How much small business get? Nothing. How many homes were saved by Barack Obama meeting with all the bank executives and mortgage companies, say, we're putting a moratorium right now by executive order, but you're going to follow this moratorium, and all home foreclosures stop? Didn't happen. Should it? Yes. Did it? No. And yet, were the very people who were forced out of their homes who voted for Barack Obama, did they vote for him again? Of course they did. Do you see what I'm talking about? This is the fallibility of human nature once it's indoctrinated. And we're living in a more and more indoctrinated society. Not everybody, but way too many. Just want to share that with you. But now we're going to get a little deeper, because they're going further with artificial intelligence, and it's going to be weaponized. Now, you can go to PRN.live, scroll down to shows, then scroll over to Garinol's archive, and you can watch this, because this is really powerful. It's only 3 minutes and 3 seconds long. Once again, Elon Musk, and he's making a prediction, all right, a prediction for what's about to happen in the next few years, about World War III, and it's not nuclear that's his biggest fear. Here's Elon Musk with his shocking prediction.
There's going to be a third World War. And after World War III, who knows what's left after World War III? So there's arguably this race between, do we become a multi-planet species or World War III? Which one is first? And if World War III is first, then maybe we never get to another planet. Humanity really is not evolved to think of existential threats in general. We've evolved to think about things that are very close to us, near term, to be upset with other humans, and not to really to think about things that could destroy humanity as a whole. Like, there are more advanced weapons that the US has that people don't know about.
You're almost a strategic weapon in modern warfare. How do you see your role in that context? Ukraine shows that there are opportunities, that you need it.
SpaceX and Tesla are not forced to develop any kind of weapons technology. Obviously, we would only do such a thing if it was the last resort.
We're really playing a crazy game here.
Civilization is globalized, and so civilization, I think, now rises and falls together. There's no geographic isolation. This is a big risk.
There's likely to be another Dark Ages, which
It seems, my guess is there probably will be, particularly if there's a third world war.
There's a whole generation coming through who seem really sad about the future. What would you say to them?
Learn the lessons of history such that we do not repeat the mistakes of the past.
Too many of us think it is impossible. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made. Therefore, they can be solved by man.
I find history fascinating to help you understand the nature of civilization, their rise and their fall.
You look at great civilizations like ancient Egypt, and they were able to make the pyramids, and they forgot how to do that. And the Romans, they built these incredible aqueducts. They forgot how to do it.
If we can make civilization last for a million years or something, you know, we probably will know much more of the answer. And I date civilization from, like I said, the first writing. It was like 5,000 years ago. Just practically no time at all. So if we were to last a million more years, then like we're barely at the beginning of civilization. Like if civilization does last a million years, we will be seen, they'll think of us as like ancient, like we would be like cavemen type of thing, you know? Well, I think if you want the future to be good, you must make it so. Take action to make it good, and it will be.
Keep in mind that the people in Silicon Valley who are coming up with all these ideas have to have what is known as product differentiation, meaning they have to show that the product they're providing and service exceeds that which you're used to now. And things are going to get worse because they have to have more extreme outcomes, but always sugarcoating it, never showing you the downside of the outcome. Look at the outcome of all the vaccines. Not a single vaccine prevented or protected you or prevented you from going to the hospital or dying. To the contrary, 90% of the people in one recent study that I just read yesterday were all vaccinated with the boosters. The more boosters you get, the more likely you are to be hospitalized and die. And yet people will still line up to get them because their conditioned response is the Pavlovian response. Ring the bell, the dog salivates and comes for a meal. Turn on the television, turn on TikTok, and suddenly there's more of something there that you thought you needed in your life. You don't. You need less of all this propaganda. So they're going to make everything militarized. For example, when Gloria Nuland was testifying under oath about 9 months ago or so, and she acknowledged that there were over 23 biological labs in Ukraine. Those are all controlled by the United States, built by the United States. How many more around the world? That question wasn't asked. Who gave permission for biological agents to be created? Why did you need all these labs all over the place creating gain of function when gain of function was outlawed by Obama? It was being offshored. Who was paying for it? Fauci and Collins, and funneling it through a third party. I see. So plausible deniability. Yes. So, what were we doing? Well, the one person who won the Nobel Prize at the Institut Pasteur, Luc Montagnier, and his team found that there were multiple cleavage sites in these, and these had been created long ago, and the HIV virus had been inserted, hepatitis C had been inserted, Christoph Jacob's disease, or mad cow disease, the gene had been inserted. So the prion phenomena. So you don't kill an enemy outright. You can simply disable them. And so, why is it that this is allowed? Why aren't there hearings on it? No hearings on it. No one's been called in. Who's behind all this? The Defense Department. Why aren't they held accountable? Since when have they ever been held accountable for anything? I see. Now you're starting to see the interconnectivity, all this. Let's take a look at this, what I just mentioned. Rodney, go to clip 5, Power Slap, Road to the Title. Neurologist Dr. Devi tells Inside Edition that slap fighting could cause brain damage. Okay, it could also cause hearing, breaking your eardrum. It can cause vision. You could smack the head so hard that you adversely affect the nerves and to the eye, including the macula, can become detached. You can break a person's jaw. You can dislocate their teeth. And if your slap missed the jaw directly in a part of the neck, you could crush an artery. You could cause an embolism. Wow. But that's good, isn't it? Because the more blood you show, the more the American public, or segments of the American public, the wayward tribes, they want this. This is where we're at today. This isn't the future. This is right now. Let's go to the clip.
It may be the most controversial reality show ever.
One, two.
It's called Power Slap Road to the Title, based on the growing phenomenon of organized slap fighting across America. Each contestant slaps the other with 30 seconds recovery time between slaps. The New York Times is condemning the TBS show today. Televised face slapping? What are we becoming? And The New Yorker says it's impossible to defend. By any reasonable standard, this is an absurd idea. This guy was slapped so hard, he couldn't remember being hit.
You got knocked out. Okay.
Knocked out doing what? Was I fighting?
The so-called sport is a recognized sport in Nevada and even has a league run by tycoon Dana White, who is president of Ultimate Fighting Championship.
This is the opportunity of a life.
Yeah, the opportunity. Of course it would be in Las Vegas. Every degenerate thing in the world is in Las Vegas. Well, everything looked like Wayne Newton's hairdo. He's still making out with Donka Shane. Get up to date. Wayne, it's a little old, but that's Las Vegas, tacky as hell. In any case, your thoughts, that's how we become. Remember, this is this step, and now they've got to go to another step, because then that'll get boring at a certain point. I want to see something worse, and look at all the extremes. Remember the guy that showed the world how unique he was by getting in that little jumpsuit and then jumping off a cliff and sailing around all the curves at like 100 miles an hour? And for 3 years, 4 years, that worked. And then he missed a curve and went, boom, died. A lot of others have too. Why do we need to go to such extremes? What's missing in our life? That gets back to what I call the big empty. And boy, we're filling that void with all the wrong suggestions. Here is another. I know I'd like to take some calls now. 888-874-4888. I'd like you to respond. So we're going to take a break and come back, and then we'll see who's on the line and how you'd like to respond to anything about artificial intelligence and how they have no boundaries, they have no regulations, they have no rules, and it's only when they screw up, and later after they screw up, that we're going to see how wrong those decisions were. And you're going to have someone up in a, well, I don't know, I was hired and given, you know, no one told me I couldn't, you know, kill people with my robot. But didn't we already see a robot? Didn't we see an artificial intelligence in the robot that looked completely human? I wouldn't have known it wasn't a human being, saying, if I could do anything, what would I do to humans? Kill them, they said. I played it twice. Kill them. I see. Does that have anything to do with Harari at the World Economic Forum saying the average person is just a useless, worthless eater? Could be. Because I don't see any elites going into a smack. That would be good, though. Let's get all the Kardashians. Let's get everyone in Hollywood. Let's get all the rap artists. Let's get all the people on Wall Street to get their sons, daughters, wives, and husbands all on that slap reality show. Huh? No, it's not going to happen, is it? No, they're very clear on the class that they're in and the class they want you to stay in. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I want to add another story in here. This is from Yahoo, from Aditi Ganguly. It's with new artificial intelligence platform aimed at dethroning ChatGPT. Quote, the success of the artificial intelligence software ChatGPT has been the biggest win for the technology sector so far this year after disappointing 2022. Tech giants and startups alike are racing to replicate the AI artificial intelligence platform, which witnessed a meteoric success overnight, and billionaire tech genius Elon Musk is no exception. But the Twitter CEO has made some controversial statements regarding artificial intelligence over the years. Some might not be aware that Musk is co-founder of Open Artificial Intelligence, the startup that created ChatGPT. He left the organization in 2018 because of disagreements in AI development strategies and to refocus on his electric car and space exploration companies. The tech mogul believes artificial intelligence to be, quote, the greatest threat to humanity, and says it could have a, quote, Terminator-like outcome. Think of that for a moment. Before OpenAI was founded in 2015, Musk stated that AI is, quote, potentially more dangerous than nukes. At the World Government Summit held last month in Dubai and United Arab Emirates, the Tesla company founder said one of the biggest risks to the future of civilization is AI. But AI is both positive and negative. It has great promise, great capability, but also it comes with great danger. Okay, so we know what the good part of it is, but why aren't any of the people discussing the downside? Why aren't we talking about what happens when gain-of-function research is militarized and weaponized? And that's what has come out in papers, actual papers, showing that for more than 15 years, the United States funded, Anthony Fauci funded gain-of-function research working cooperatively with the communist government and the Defense Department that is only interested in militarization at the Wuhan lab. None of that has come out yet, but it exists. The papers, the proof of it, the article they published over there in 2005, yeah, they don't care about making a better vaccine. They care about making something that when people get it, without being aware of what they're getting, it can then be weaponized. So if you had a whole military that gets it, mandates every person in the military, you could, depending upon how lethal you want to make it, you could completely destroy an entire military of an entire country. So we're not being told the whole truth. There is one person out there who is trying to bring us this information in some hearings, and some interesting testimony of whistleblowers are coming out. So let's go. We're going to have to say goodbye to our WBA audience, but we're going to continue on to the top of the show at PRN.live. So let's go to the clip. Now let's put the lab leak debate to rest.
So, David, I appreciate you being here for your time. It's inspired by a video that you recently put out that I thought was so urgent and valuable for the people. Knowing that we all have very limited time and short attention spans out there, I requested that we do an overview of the message that is now going viral, but I think more people need to understand the severity of what you have deduced from all your deep, unwavering research.
Well, Mickey, what we know is that the Department of Energy report that has now attracted an enormous amount of attention has suggested that they have what they call a low confidence interval in their narrative that the origins of coronavirus were a lab leak in China. And it's very important for everyone to realize that this is a misdirection, just like every other part of the propaganda of this particular pandemic has been, which has, not surprisingly, been the ongoing effort to implicate an exclusive responsibility for this on China. We actually have written evidence submitted in 2015, published in 2016, that actually doesn't leave any room for even a question. This is not a low confidence interval. This is actually a dead-on 100% certainty. And remember, this is during the gain-of-function moratorium that Anthony Fauci has said he never funded, despite the fact that the grant that gave rise to this research came from him. Let's read a very small bit of the excerpts from the SARS-like Wuhan Institute of Virology Virus 1 COV Poised for Human Emergence paper. And the reason why it's important for us to understand this is the question is, did it come from nature or did it come from a lab? And the answer to that is it came from a lab 100%. So let's read how we know that. First, it says, using the SARS-CoV infectious clone as a template, we designed and synthesized a full-length infectious clone of WIV1-CoV. You know what that says? A lab took a model and built a model not from nature, but from a lab. This part is more beautiful. In addition to the full-length clone, we also produced WIV1-CoV chimeric virus that replaced the SARS spike protein for the Wuhan Institute of Virology spike protein. This is a specific engineering where we took what was already infectious and weaponized it with the Wuhan Institute of Virology virus 1 spike protein. And then we get to a very interesting problem, Mickey, and this is where we have a real massive challenge. Let's listen to what they said about what they built. Wuhan Institute of Virology virus 1 COV could be used to drive improved therapeutics, including escape mutants, for improved monoclonal antibodies, or more broadly, neutralizing vaccine approaches. In other words, having built the pathogen, having built the weapon, having weaponized and loaded the gun, they then tell us why they want to do it. They want to use that weapon to justify the development of new vaccines. This is not hypothesis. This is their statement of intent. And for those still debating on whether it was US or whether it was China, let's go ahead and put a nail in that coffin. People in both states who decided to hijack humanity are the perpetrators. These are human beings who willfully worked to weaponize a pathogen to advance a vaccine story. That's what they said they were doing. That's what they did. And let's go ahead and name who they are. We thank Dr. Zhengli Shi of the Wuhan Institute of Virology for access to bat COV sequences and plasmid WIV1 COV spike protein. We're thanking the Chinese lab in Wuhan in 2015 for delivering the weapon that was used to kill humanity. Thank you. And we're grateful that we allowed that to be replicated at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, under the funding of Anthony Fauci, funding the gain-of-function research during the moratorium, with the beautiful recipient of that funding being Ralph S. Baric himself, named in the paper. Mickey, this is not a low-confidence statement. This is a certain...
Okay. Once again, you're hearing from voices that are not allowed in the mainstream media to discuss or debate the issues. But everything they told us has been a lie, and their story is unraveling. We'll present more as the information and documentation to support it comes in. We're at the end of our program. Utrice Lead is next. Please stay with us.